Hey, this is Kevin Sorbo here, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. And really, do some thinking, seriously. This is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Thinking Outside the Long Box. My name is Thomas Strange, and welcome to a very awkward episode of Thinking Outside the Long Box. My guests, as always, are my good friends Joshua Opper. How you doing, Josh?
I am doing well, as I am the perpetual special guest.
You are the perpetual special guest. And LT, how are you, my friend?
I am recovering from the con crud.
Con crud is doing
much better than that was last week.
Con crud takes us all at some point, my friend. And my good friend Mike Manning, how are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. I'm very excited. I finally got my Martian Manhunter mask.
Oh, and we're excited to see that. We saw pictures of it. And damn them for not having it ready in time for Dragon Con.
I know. Stupid excuse. Oh, we lost all our houses.
Oh, natural disaster wiped out our town. Ooh.
Yeah, how do you lose a house? Come on.
Come on, man. Just look at your driver's license.
There's an address. Look it up.
You have a supercomputer in your pocket and you still can't find it.
In their Between defense, the supercomputer might have been shorted out by all the water.
There was a lot of water. Of course, they were flooded out for a while, and we do actually wish them the best of luck in rebuilding. But thanks for finally getting our mask to us. We sound like awful people.
It's a great company. They do amazing work. If you're a cosplayer, you should check out CompositeEffects.com. It's really good. It's based out of Baton Rouge, and they could probably use the business now that a lot of their employees lost everything they owned.
Yeah, all kidding aside, it's a great company, and they really could use some extra money because the rain and the flooding really did a number on them. Wow, way to bring it down at the very beginning of the podcast, man. You should save that for the end.
No problem. I'm going to talk about dying children later. I can't wait.
Ah, this is going to be a great episode from here. That's right. And today's, we're actually going to be talking about kind of an interesting subject, one that was recommended by one of our listeners, and that is distaff characters. Who wants to tell people what a distaff character is?
So a distaff character is a female character who either has taken over for a male character or a female character who is based on a male character. For example, Hawkeye is the new Hawkeye. Kate is a distaff version of the original Hawkeye. Or you have your classics like Batgirl, Supergirl, Hawkwoman, all female characters based on male characters.
And that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to talk about some of our favorites, some of our least favorite. It's not going to just be a list. We're going to talk about one or two that we really liked and one or two that we didn't care for all that much. Josh, you were just looking up an interesting one. Tell us what was one of your faves.
So I was going to go for this is actually my second one. My first one's a little more involved, so I'll give people a chance by going with number one. So the first one is, of course, Spider-Woman. You know, she's Why of course? Because
yes.
I love Spider-Man.
That's a good point.
That's my number one. Sorry. In case the listeners didn't know that. I'm picking Spider-Woman because Spider-Man is probably one of my favorite characters of all time. Him and the X-Men, that's how I roll. Anyway, in the original series, Spider-Woman is initially actually an evolved spider. That whole story arc lasts approximately 4 issues before it gets retconned, because people clearly think it's ridiculous. After that, she rolls through the initial launch. She has some up and downs through the 70s and 80s. She does get an animated TV show for a very short period of time. And then she sort of gets
like 5 seconds.
Like 5 seconds, but it was great. It was great. And In the mid-2000s, she gets brought back because of the new Avengers. And with Secret Invasion, they sort of basically said, oh, all that stuff that she did before was that was a Skrull, and now this is the real Spider-Woman, and now let's carry on. So she's had a lot of ups and downs, a lot of short runs. And in the beginning, there was a lot of people who they were cycling through writers really fast, and a lot of people just didn't like how it sort of hopped, skipped, and jumped around. And so I think it just didn't catch on as well as it should if they had a solid team in there for an extended period of time. But I like the character, I think she's been used pretty well over the years. But I think she's been the victim of pass the buck.
And speaking of a victim, I'm going to talk about one of my favorite female distaff characters, Lady Stiltman.
What issue is this character from? Sorry.
Well, she's been around for a little while. She was with the Masters of Evil. She was with Villains for Hire. She shows up every once in a while. So for those not in the know, Stiltman is this guy who has a superpowered costume that's a suit of armor. And can do a lot of really cool things, including extend the legs over a super long distance. And he uses it to rob really high up buildings. Instead of using it as a giant robot armor suit, and, you know, he could rent himself out as a wacky waving inflatable arm flailing two man and probably make more money than he does robbing places because he always gets caught. But a female version shows up, and the identity of Lady Stiltman is still a mystery. Not a lot's known about her except that she is with the Masters of Evil and the Villains for Hire. And also, Max Fury got her to join the Shadow Council's newest incarnation of the Masters of Evil. She's been in both the original one of the original Masters of Evil and the new Masters of Evil. So, Lady Stiltman, look her up.
So, do you want to know my theory about who Lady Stiltman is?
I have a theory, too, but go ahead.
Okay, so my theory is it's Stiltman, but none of the other villains would get back to him on the villain website until he made himself a woman.
My theory is that Stiltman finally decided to be his true self. That is my real theory on that. That's my real theory on that,
I fully support transgendered Stiltman.
Well, we don't actually know if he's transgender Stiltman yet, but I actually kind of hope that what's going on here, because that would actually be kind of cool. Try to top that, LT. Who's your favorite distaff character?
Well, I like just the distaff character that doesn't exist yet. In November, Marvel is planning on introducing a new Iron Man, who is a 15-year-old girl named Riri Williams, and she is going to take over as being Iron Man. They're going to rename her Iron Heart, and I think it sounds like a fantastic idea. She basically has, according to the news from last month, she has reverse-engineered Iron Man's armor. She is an MIT student, and she is a teenage African-American girl. It's a fantastic idea.
So I was just curious. So I did not know this off the top of my head. This is ye olde interwebs answering. Marvel's actually already had a character called Ironheart, because that sounded familiar to me. He's another guy in a power suit from Earth 616.
Well, now she's going to be your Iron Man.
All right.
There's actually going to be another Iron Man, too. Dr. Doom is putting on the Iron Man armor.
At this point, hasn't put on the Iron Man armor?
I haven't.
I mean, Stane has worn a copy of a version of the suit in the movies. Then there was the Dark Avengers, where they had the Iron Patriot. You've got War Machine, who's just another variation of the Iron Man armor. I think eventually everyone in the Marvel Universe will try on the Iron Man armor at some point.
You name like five guys. More people have picked up Thor's hammer than have worn the armor.
I'm just saying, they're working their way up to it.
Who's picked up Thor's hammer?
Wonder Woman?
Odin's son?
Beta Ray Bill.
Beta Ray Bill.
The Vision.
The frog guy.
Eric Masterson.
Vision.
Oh, well, if we go into Thor Corps, there's totally a lot more.
Yeah. My point exactly. Tom wins. That's all I'm going to say on that. Mikey, give me your favorite distaff character.
I'm going to go with Thor. Speaking of Thor. But my choice is Jane Foster. Now, when we talk about horrible stereotypes, Tom always says there's an arc. And Jane Foster definitely has an arc in the comic books. She starts off as a nurse for Donald Blake. Later on, she's retconned to being a doctor. Well, so during the point where she was a nurse, she is just the romantic love interest of both Donald Blake and Thor, and it's kind of a weird love triangle because she feels guilty because she has feelings for both those guys because Thor's a dick and doesn't bother to tell her that he's the same guy. Later on, she becomes a doctor, gets married, has a kid, but ends up going back to Thor and as a result loses custody of her kid when she divorces her husband. And to top everything off, she then becomes Thor. But after she becomes Thor, she gets cancer. And right now, she's battling cancer. And unfortunately, every time she becomes Thor, Thor heals her body. Not the cancer in her body, but the chemotherapy that is being used to kill the cancer in her body. So she has to decide between whether it's more important to be a hero and save people right now or to save herself. And she's currently choosing to be a hero.
As well she would. That initial Jane Foster character was very much like the old Lois Lane, who was both in love with Superman and with Clark Kent at the same time. And I thought that was, pretty evocative of that
time. Super douchey?
Super douchey, yeah.
At least it's an interesting conundrum.
Yeah.
So I would think that she would need to always choose to be the hero in order to be worthy to pick up the hammer.
All right, Josh, what's your second favorite distaff character?
I think my second one fulfills probably both sides of the coin here. So the original Captain Marvel, or Mar-Vell, back in the 40s, is actually a alien sent to Earth, a Kree. That's in the 60s reboot, but that's the one I know best. So in the reboot, he's a Kree sent to Earth. And eventually, through several iterations, Captain Marvel's popularity wanes, especially in the 80s. And they decide that he is going to die in a horrible explosion. And nearby is Carol Danvers. Carol Danvers, her biology is meshed with Captain Marvel, and she becomes, initially they call her Miss Marvel, but then she is renamed Captain Marvel and then back to Miss Marvel. There have been several other characters who portrayed Miss Marvel, but Carol Danvers is the primary. And then later on, she gets kidnapped and has a horrible experience in another dimension. And when she is brought back, the cleanup storyline by Chris Claremont includes her being attacked by Rogue, and then Rogue absorbs the powers and personality of Carol Danvers. And then the character sort of exists for a while, both as a splinter of Rogue's personality, as well as then later on, what was the Siege Perilous. She passes through the Gateway Siege Perilous, and she gets split back into Miss Marvel again. So I think she's both a female character based on a male character, but she's also someone who has part of the personality and actual being of a male character who was destroyed. So I think she sort of fits the bill all around. Just about everywhere.
She does. I like that one. I'm going to talk about two quick ones for mine because they go on the same thing. I'm going to talk about The Question and The Beetle. These are both characters who didn't have to take the word lady or miss or anything and add it to their name. The Question, of course, was this terrific character, a little bit like Batman, had no face, had the blue overcoat, and was kind of a conspiracy theorist nut. Later on, the question was taken over by Montoya. What was Montoya's first name?
Renee.
Anybody remember? Renee Montoya, thank you very much. And Renee Montoya, you know, didn't become the lady question. She just became the question. Also remarkable for being one of the first gay characters in the DC universe. The question didn't feel the need, or the writers, I should say, didn't feel the need to make it the lady question. And the same with one of my favorite supervillains, that is the Beetle. The Beetle is the armor of the Beetle is taken over by someone named Janice Lincoln, who we later find out was Tombstone's daughter. Good thing that Tombstone's daughter didn't get any of Tombstone's powers, because those would be really weird and creepy powers for a female to have. Because, you know, Tombstone basically is ash gray and talk like this. I'm not sure if that's part of his superpower set, but it's part of his whole personality. The Beetle didn't become the Lady Beetle. She didn't become Girl Beetle. She didn't become Janice Beetle. She just stayed the Beetle. She fought alongside of a lot of these Sinister Six, even though there were only five of them in the Spear Foes of Spider-Man, and one of the greatest of all time. And those are my two characters who were female characters that were Distaff, but didn't have to take Distaff names. Follow that, yeah, Tommy. Oh, go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to say, Beetle is also a reoccurring booty call in the Astonishing Ant-Man series right now.
Really? With a reoccurring booty call for who?
Ant-Man. So every time he hooks up with her, he feels really guilty because she's a supervillain, and he knows he shouldn't be doing it, but the fact that it's so naughty actually keeps on driving him to call her.
For Ant-Man.
Wow, that's really good for Ant-Man. Get out there.
That's right.
I guess he's not married to Janice anymore.
That's hilarious and disturbing all at the same time.
Everyone loves the villain. Especially Ant-Man.
And if you're Ant-Man, you love the villain several times a week.
What comic book is that again, Mikey?
Astonishing Ant-Man by Nick Spencer.
I'm going to have to start reading Astonishing Ant-Man by Nick Spencer.
He's the guy who wrote the Superior Foes of Spider-Man.
I love the Superior. Yeah, as you all know, I love the Superior Foes of Spider-Man. All right, so Tommy, what did you have for your next one?
My next one, I chose to go way back, and I chose Batgirl. And I know there's been several Batgirls, but the one I chose was the classic Batgirl of Barbara Gordon, Commissioner Gordon's daughter. You know, appears in Detective Comics back in 1967. Kind of in Gotham, operating on her own, just kind of casually running into Batman and Detective Comics 359, and then sort of becomes kind of a semi-regular ally of Batman on and off throughout the ages, always working in Gotham by herself. It's very kind of the old issues are readable. They're very much in the vein of Batman 66, as was kind of the coming of Batgirl, since she both came on to Batman in season 2 on TV, which would have been 67, and also came into the comics around the same time. So if you like Batman 66, go pick up yourself one of the Showcase Presents Batgirls, because it will bring you back that era. And of course, Tommy knows a little bit about this because he keeps referencing the issue where Batgirl gets distracted from her crime fighting because she has a run in her tights and she's concerned about her appearance, etc. and so forth.
Yeah, we talk about that every once in a while because it was an interesting way of dissing the character for no good reason. But also it was a little funny that some people thought that her whole being distracted was just her way of distracting supervillains. So we've talked about that in a couple of our feminism and superhero panels. I don't reference it often, though. But it's good.
I will disagree with you, though, as far as her being the classic Batgirl, because Betty Kane is the classic Batgirl.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I knew somebody was going to bring up Betty Kane. I still like Barbara Gordon the best.
Name She's one superhero Batgirl. Is a better tennis player than Betty Kane.
The Flash?
I'm sorry, one super?
I think The Flash could play excellent tennis, even against himself.
He would be bored by the first set and give up.
I would say that the Taskmaster would probably be just as good.
Oh. All right, I'll give you that Taskmaster would be just as good.
Touche.
Thank you. Just looking for a tie on that one.
So, Mike, hey, did you not like Barbara Gordon?
I love Barbara Gordon. I love Barbara Gordon as Oracle, and she should have stayed in the wheelchair.
Maybe she should have, but before she was Oracle, she was Batgirl. Did you not like her as Batgirl?
I did like her as Batgirl. In fact, I thought she was great. However, still upset with DC Comics for taking away one of the most handy, capable superheroes of all time for no apparent reason.
And I totally agree with you, but what I'm talking about is from 1967. Years before Oracle. Decades before Oracle. Cheesy, campy Batman. Sometimes ally Batgirl. I don't know, man. You can never forget your first Batgirl.
Yeah, I kind of like the old purple-suited Batgirl myself. That's just me.
Her outfit to change in the comic book is hilarious. Her cowl is really a beret that she pulls down. And her skirt, she takes off and reverses it to use it as a cape. I mean, it's very cheesy.
Well, we all know why Batgirl was created. It's because Batman and Robin were viewed as being a little too homosexual back in the golden age of comics. And when The Seduction of the Innocent came out, part of the rebranding of DC to make them more friendly, they created Batwoman and Batgirl so those characters would have paramours, which kind of leads into my next superhero. It's Supergirl. So in the golden age of comics, Superman was not the best-selling comic book as far as superheroes go. Captain Marvel, when he came out, started kicking Superman's butt. And one of the reasons was because Captain Marvel had a great supporting cast of characters besides Steamboat. Captain Marvel had his sister, Mary Marvel, and little girls liked to read about a girl who would become a superhero. So in response, even though DC was suing Captain Marvel's company, Fawcett Comics, for copyright infringement by creating Captain Marvel, who was too similar to Superman, they rip off Fawcett Comics and create Supergirl, who's a direct ripoff of Mary Marvel. Supergirl is Superman's cousin, who comes to the planet and is promptly met by Superman when she arrives and sent to an orphanage because Superman's kind of a jerk. But they use Supergirl as a possible romantic interest for Superman throughout the 1950s and 60s in a really creepy manner. But now she is mainstream. She has her own TV show, which is excellent. And her comic books have never quite lived up to the promise that you would think from a Supergirl character. I think the TV show is actually better. Although the Peter David run on Supergirl back in the 1990s and late 2000s or early 2000s wasn't bad.
So I'm going to say it one more time. Superman, super douchey.
A little bit.
Yeah, I can't yes and. Yeah. No one wants to yes and on that one, I'm afraid.
But it's kind of true.
We're trying not to no but you, but I just can't yes and that one, my friend.
Well, I've got to say that in terms of Supergirl, I like the Superman Batman animated series back in the 90s, where Supergirl was someone not from Krypton, but from a neighboring planet that Superman finds and saves. And that makes it a little less incestuous in my mind, because I could see him having a relationship with somebody from the next planet over.
Yeah, they're only like second cousins in that point. right, well, that brings us to our special segments. Now, my special segment has always been social relevance in comic books, and today I want to start it off because it kind of hooks back with Distaff characters. I'm going to talk about a few female writers from the 1930s all the way to the 70s who used a Distaff name so that they could write comic books. Now, some of these are actually their names, but they left it, whether or not they were male or female, kind of open to interpretation. And a few of them actually did change their names slightly, like taking their middle names, so that they could write as a male writer, or at least not be immediately outed as a female writer. Nell Brinkley being one of the first one, the creator of the Brinkley Girl. Tony Bloom of Eisner and Igner Studios. That one's not very famous, but a few people have heard of her. Ray Herman was female. She worked for Holyoke Publishing. They came out with a lot of great comic books, including Catman and Miss Fury. And speaking of Catman and Miss Fury, another pseudonym there was Tarp Mills, and that was the pseudonym of June Mills, who wrote a lot of those characters. There's a whole list, but I want people to be aware that these Distaff names didn't just apply to the female characters. They had to sometimes apply to both the writers and artists at the time, because comic books were thought to be not really a safe place for women to work. So if you were a female writer, this wasn't the place for you. The bullpen was pretty much thought of as a rowdy all-boys club. So it wouldn't do your reputation much good to be thought of one of these, comic book writers. To give you some idea how bad it was to be a comic book writer, Stan Lee also used a different name when he, took the name Stan Lee, because he didn't want his name as with comic books, something most comic book readers have forgiven him for.
But also, Tom, wasn't his pen name a bit more Americanized than his actual name?
No, that's not why he did it. He wrote plenty of other articles under his real name. Stan Lee was just for comic books, so no one would know he wrote comic books. He said that a million times. Right in our faces, too. It's not like he's even hiding it. He just didn't want to be known as a comic book writer.
It was, comic books were considered a lesser art form back then. Even cartoonists looked down on comic book writers.
That's right, and it took Stan Lee to elevate it all up.
It's true. I'm not saying that Stan Lee didn't do amazing stuff for comic books or any of that, but Stan Lieber could have done amazing things for comic books too, but he didn't. Just remember that there was a lot of shame involved with comic books, and being a woman in the comic book field was considered, distasteful at the very least. So many changed their names to hide the fact that they were both women, and to also change their name to hide the shame that they were writing comic books. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to take us off on a tangent there. Speaking of going off on a tangent, Josh, do you have a tangent for us?
I do. So, I was at a wedding this weekend, and
did you bring your mom?
Really? That we're gonna do that right now?
Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot your mom dated the guys. We won't get into it. Go ahead. Favorite what, Joshua?
Ow! He just put me in a hole. Putting me in a hole with my mom. That's bad. Anyway, favorite fictional wedding?
Luke Cage. That wasn't the best comic book ever. You know what? I'm going to have to change it. Macho Man Randy Savage to Miss Elizabeth. That was a great fictional wedding.
I'm going to go with North Star's wedding in Astonishing X-Men number 50.
You gotta be shitting
me, really?
You just wanted to hear Tommy yell.
That's exactly why. Yes.
That's the worst piece of crap I've ever
had. Hey, we don't diss what we hate.
Oh, I diss that. I've got enough hate to diss that.
Well, you loathe that one, so I guess I'll let it slide.
It was horrible.
All right, Tommy, what's your favorite then?
It's kind of hard.
Kevin
I think
Keller was a good one.
Going, since we're just going with fictional characters altogether, I would say that Apollo and Sheba marrying on Battlestar Galactica back in the 70s.
Okay. Wow, that's a deep cut.
In terms of comic books, though, I would probably say Reed Richards and Sue Storm's wedding.
That was a good one too. I like Kevin Keller's. Now that I'm thinking about it, that was a nice. That was a well done comic book. So, Josh, what's yours?
Mine is from our own D&D campaign, where my cleric oversaw Mike's character's wedding.
I laughed. I cried. It became a part of us. Yeah.
I laughed, I cried, and I turned a vampire with a natural 20. Bam.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mike. I shorted that adventure.
Yeah, you sucked. Always leave it to the players to ruin a perfectly good campaign.
Yeah, that whole campaign would have been different if that vampire had stolen your bride.
You know, that whole campaign would have been different if you guys just knocked on the door that said, "Dangerous prisoner, do not open," and asked if Zig was there.
Yeah, that would have been a very different campaign, wouldn't it?
Yeah. That's what
missed opportunities. Hey, we read the sign. Dangerous prisoner. Okay. Next door.
We're looking for.
All right. So I also like the red wedding. Is that wrong of me?
No.
Yeah, that's very wrong of you.
It was a fantastic wedding. Everybody was in attendance.
It was very happy. It was the reception that wasn't great.
The wedding was terrific. The reception could have used some work.
Yeah,
I blame the wedding planner.
I blame the flower girl.
Yeah. You really have to have all cylinders firing. I mean, I've done weddings before. This is really more of a wedding planner issue than anything else. Was that everyone's take on a wedding? All right, then, good. Mikey, what do you got at the front of the long box for us today?
All right, so DC Comics has entered into an agreement with Hanna-Barbera Comics, and they are doing updated versions of these comics. So I've already read the Wacky Races, which I didn't really like. Future Quest, which has great reviews, but still really wasn't my cup of tea. I liked Scooby-Doo Apocalypse, where Scooby is a science experiment, and that's why he can talk. But hands down, the best comic of the lot, and probably one of the best comics on the market, is the Flintstones. That's right, the Flintstones.
Now you called me up and told you called me up and told me about this, and I cannot tell you how excited I am to read this because of it, Mikey. I can't wait to read this one.
If you want to find, if you want to destroy your fond memories of the Flintstones, you need to read this comic. You are not going to encounter a more socially conscious comic out there. I made a quick little list of all the different things that just issue number one talks about. Corporate culture and Ayn Rand, the exploitation of migrant workers, modern art, the entertainment value of the MMA, veterans suffering from PTSD, workplace sexual harassment, motivational posters, consumer culture, the fashion industry, and hipsters. In addition to all that, the fallacy of war advancing civilization when it's the total opposite. It is a great comic, and it only gets better after issue one. Issue number two is all about consumer culture and religion. And issue number three is all about spring break and veterans of foreign wars. It will make you rethink everything when you go back and watch the cartoons and Fred Flintstone says yabba dabba doo, or when in the comic books they explain why the Great Gazoo is really in the prehistoric age.
Oh, my God. I can't wait to read this stupid comic. Now, there was a one throwaway gag that you told me about that I thought was so funny that I've told like 9 people about it. Tell us the one throwaway gag about why Fred Flintstone always wears a tie.
Fred Flintstone is talking to one of the Neanderthals who are being exploited by Mr. Slate. And he asks Fred, why do you wear a tie? And Fred says, Oh, I read an article that says you should dress for the job you want, not for the job you have. And the guy said, oh, when did you read that? And Fred says, 15 years ago.
That is such a brilliant throwaway gag line that it makes me insane. That's just brilliant and stupid. I mean, I can't wait to read this comic book. Tom,
I
have
heard
something.
That advice probably about 15 years ago.
That's why I always dress up as a spaceman.
That's why I cosplay as a superhero.
Tommy, what do you got at the back of the long box? I hope it's as good as that.
Oh, it's nowhere near as good as that, because that sounds amazing. I was going to talk about New Mutants Classic Volume 4. We talked about this a little bit before in that it starts out with the first storyline involving Legion, and then it goes into another story arc where Karma, one of the ex-New Mutants, psionically takes control over most of the team and pits them against one another while she's trying to take as much control over mutants as she can. She runs a kind of mutant arena for mutants to battle each other called the Gladiators. And once that gets kind of put the kibosh on by some of the X-Men and the New Mutants and Dazzler, you know, she then tries to take over all the New Mutants in a kind of power grab for taking control over as many people as she can. Nifty little story
wow.
arc.
All right,
but
well,
it's a yabba dabba do, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right, guys, I guess it's time for plugs. Anyone have anything new they want to plug?
I do.
All right.
You guys should, if you're into sci-fi, one of the friend of the podcast, Aaron McMichael, has written The Reality Raiders. You can go to realityraiders.com and check it out. Or you can go to our updated website, outsidethelongbox.com, where I have put a link to her and a whole bunch of other people up there, including Kirby Crackle, who provides all our geek rock music, and to Top Cow, where they have free digital comics you can download, including Think Tank, the whole first arc from Matt Hawkins, who we interviewed last week.
Oh, great. I look forward to seeing that. All right, Mike, Tommy, anything?
Well, since Mikey is plugging bands, I think I would like to plug Acapulco Lips. They are a very heavily surf-influenced band that I've been really digging this week. And also, since we haven't really mentioned it this podcast yet, why not plug IanLino.com, IanLino.com, purveyor of fine, geeky things like T-shirts, posters, and stained glass prints.
All right, well, I'm going to try to plug our Twitter page because I'd like to get some more people on it. And that's Outside the Long Box, at the Long Box, guys. Today's entire episode was because one of our friends reached out to us and asked us to talk about distaff characters. So if there's anything you guys want us to talk about, just yell out and we'll probably do an episode about it. We're just that good.
Right, in addition to tweeting us at the Long Box, guys, you could also email us at luckybastard@outsidethelongbox.com and possibly win a free graphic novel. This month's past winner is John Larson, who is in Uganda. That's right. We have a listener in Uganda who just won a free copy of Saga. So what's this month's giveaway going to be, LT?
If you want to hold on, I will go make a choice right now.
All right, we'll talk amongst ourselves for a while. Are you gone? Good. God, I hate that guy. Oh my God. If
he
we could just
worst.
Get rid of this one guy. I did have someone who listened to the podcast say that sometimes I'm a little mean to LT. I'd like to make it official now that he can't hear me that LT is one of my closest friends and I love that stupid bastard. Hey, LT, you back, you dumb bastard?
I am back. This month, it looks like we're giving away Dr. Atlantis, which was a storyline we covered the other week, and it is mostly all ages comic book. from Rare Earth Comics and copyright 2012. We're going to give that away this month.
Dr. Atlantis, you say? That sounds awesome.
Dr. Atlantis.
I want to read
this. Was
Dr.
a
Atlantis.
Great, fun little romp of a graphic novel that I picked up at a con, and that's what we're going to give away.
All right, that sounds great, LT. Josh, did you plug anything? I kind of nodded out there when he talked.
I'll go to my standards. I'll say don't forget to stop by Espionage Cosmetics for all of your con cosmetic needs, and our good friend Victor Dandridge at vantageinhouse.blogspot.com. Read his stuff, because he is the hardest working man in comics.
Can't say enough nice things about Victor Dandridge. Always so nice to us when we see him, and always so willing to sit and talk with us and give us his opinion on so many, many things. He's one of those smart guys out there that can talk on a variety of issues, comic books, or just pop culture. Just talk to the guy. He's terrific.
Yeah, in addition
to his comic, The Kindergartens, is great for kids.
Yeah, he. I have his link on our website, but I don't know if you guys have been following it at all. There's going to be a Black Lightning TV show that our good friend Tony Isabella created the character of Black Lightning. And this week we found out who created the Black Bomber.
Before you say anything else, I want you to say that I talked to Tony about this briefly, and that's probably 100% true, but he's not talking about it yet. So let's not rename the guy that probably created the Black Bomber. Tony is probably going to give us hopefully he's going to give us an interview about it, but he hasn't spoken publicly or really. He's insinuated that now that this guy's taking claim for creating Black Lightning, he also has to take claim for creating the Black Bomber. So.
But
he hasn't come right out and said it.
Tony is too classy to actually say who created it. However, his editor is the one who outed the guy who created the Black Bomber. But I guess we will follow Tony's lead, and we will let you find it out on your own.
Yeah, the Black Bomber being one of the worst characters ever created. And it's basically an Incredible Hulk character that's a white guy who, when he gets mad, turns into an African American person, and when he turns back into a white guy, is still racist. So, if this guy actually did create the Black Bomber, to hell with this guy.
And we have a whole episode dedicated
to that. We've all done things we're ashamed of. Maybe this is just this guy's mega thing that he is ashamed ever to be involved in.
But he's trying to take credit for creating Black Lightning.
No. He wasn't actually trying to. It was the editor giving this guy credit.
He had
nothing to do with creating Black Lightning. The editor was giving the guy credit, saying, well, you know, Black Lightning was based off of the character that this guy created, which is totally untrue.
That guy may be very ashamed of it, which is maybe why he never brought it up.
But anyways, listen to the Tony Isabella episode where he talks all about the Black Bomber and Black Lightning.
And hopefully Tony will get back with me this week if he wants to chat it up just a little bit, because that would be awesome. I would love to talk about that.
Hey, aren't you in a movie that comes out this week, Tom?
Yes, I am in a movie that comes out this week, by the way. It's going to be, it's premiered at a few film festivals. It's going to be at a couple of major film festivals. It's called The Adventures of Misfit, and yes, I am in it, and I show Misfit that dressing up as a superhero is a lot of fun and a good thing to do, as long as you do it to be socially conscious. I take her around San Francisco, where we pick up about 100 that day needles off the ground, hand out a bunch of food, hand out a bunch of socks. Basically something I did when I lived in San Francisco, and something I still do here in Boston area. Just I don't dress up in the superhero costume quite as much anymore. But yes, that's back when I was a real-life superhero for a while. Not that I'm ashamed of it. I just the costume doesn't work quite so well in Boston. You get wicked beat up out here.
Well, hopefully we can get an interview with either the creator of the documentary, or Misfit soon, so we can talk about it more in depth.
They're both dying to talk to us about it and embarrass me terribly about that time in my life.
And it's if you go to Vimeo, you can look at the preview for the movie, which is excellent. Tom, would you be so kind as to tweet that link out for all our followers?
I will tweet that link out in just a few seconds. And if you're looking to see what character I am the character known as Old School. And in the even in the preview, I am featured, and you can see me showing her how to find and pick up needles. Well, that's about it for Thinking Outside the Log Box today.
Why the invasion stops tonight. We had a good run, but now it's done. It seems all the stupid.